Why Tariffs Don't Create Prosperity. Welcome to this audio issue of Porter's Daily Journal, published and copyrighted by Porter & Company, all rights reserved. Please note that this recording was generated via AI and may contain minor transcription errors and pronunciation mistakes. Throughout this issue, I may reference charts, graphs, and imagery that can only be viewed on our website at porterandcompanyresearch.com. Issue number 35, volume number 3, The Biggest Mistake Trump Made Wasn't This War. It was tariffs. Inside today's Daily Journal essay, Tariffs Don't Create Prosperity. Oil depletion in the Middle East. A subprime lender's AI transformation. Eli Lilly goes to China. Chart of the day. Coupon, CPNG. Today's mailbag. In the mailbag below, a dear paid-up subscriber takes me to task about not treating our revered political leaders with more respect. He objected to my Miss Boozy McMumble's literary flourish, and, like all fanatics tend to do, accused me of being unfairly prejudiced against his team. How did he miss my repeated use of the popular slur Orange Man? Or my invention of the moniker Obama, almost 20 years ago? Or my adoption of the retard-inspired nickname The Decider during our disastrous Iraqi war? Or any of my other notorious and disrespectful critiques of our bankrupt, corrupt, vile government, and the sociopaths who populate it? About 2 weeks ago, I led my analysis of our latest foreign war with an essay inspired by Eric Hoffer's book The True Believer, 1951. I didn't realize most of my dear, paid-up subscribers had never heard of him. Hoffer is the greatest American-born philosopher, a man whose entire understanding of human nature was formed by our country and its development. Hoffer lived through America's transition from a limited republic to an all-powerful, mob-ruled democracy, and he tried to warn what would happen. Hoffer was born in New York City in 1902. When he was 5, he and his mother fell down a flight of stairs. She died. He went blind. For 8 years, he couldn't see. His vision inexplicably returned at age 15. Driven by the fear he would lose his sight again, he began to read voraciously and constantly, a practice he continued his entire life. His father died in 1920, leaving Hoffer without a family. He began a life of itinerant labor, working as a migrant farm worker, doing odd jobs around Los Angeles, and finally, in 1943, becoming a San Francisco longshoreman. Through these experiences, he observed people from all walks of American life and developed hard-won insight into human nature. He authored 10 books and received the Presidential Medal of Freedom from Ronald Reagan in 1983. He led an incredible life. If you've never read his books about how human nature can lead to fanatical political beliefs, I recommend The True Believer and The Passionate State of Mind, 1955. These books, along with Hannah Arendt's The Origins of Totalitarianism, 1951, and Stanley Milgram's Obedience to Authority, 1961, offer a stark warning about the world we see unfolding today. Arendt's study of the Nazi movement uncovered a key insight that Hoffer's work also described, the inherent human need to belong. As Arendt explained, what prepares men for totalitarian domination in the non-totalitarian world is the fact that loneliness, once a borderline experience usually suffered in certain marginal social conditions like old age, has become an everyday experience of the ever-growing masses of our century. Think about how social media and the government's response to COVID has increased social isolation. More Americans spend more time consistently alone than ever before. And for these people, the need to belong to something, to anything, becomes overwhelming. That's why embracing even the most obvious and absurd lies becomes the gateway to belonging. Arendt observed, instead of deserting the leaders who had lied to them, they would protest that they had known all along that the statement was a lie and would admire the leaders for their superior tactical cleverness. How many times in the past year have I heard otherwise very intelligent and sophisticated people say that US President Donald Trump is playing 4D chess to magically wave off obvious lies and absurd economic claims? As longtime readers know, I do not believe our latest military adventure in the Persian Gulf will end cheaply or easily, just as the others did not. I know that our military capabilities are virtually unlimited. I don't think it's likely that Iran will be able to strike back in any strategically meaningful way. What I suspect will happen is a long period of increasing unrest in the region. It's nothing that will threaten American sovereignty, but it will be a big enough problem to make trillions of dollars in profits for our largest defense contractors and our biggest energy companies. The bigger, long-term risk lies in the Republican Party's adoption of tariffs as a means of generating government revenue. These lies are particularly insidious because they have conservatives, who typically oppose raising taxes, joyfully extolling the virtues of them. And, when I explain, as I'll do below, that tariffs are merely taxes and more government is never the answer? You see the true believers emerge. Contrary facts do not change their minds. They deepen their conviction. Nevertheless, it's only facts I have to offer. So let me show you, in detail using specific companies, why tariffs are no panacea. In fact, It's because America is the largest, free trade economy that tariffs pose such a threat to our wealth. We can't win a trade war because we have the most to lose. Let's start with Nike, NKE. Nike's global brand dominance pays huge dividends for America. It, along with Coke, KO, McDonald's, MCD, Microsoft, MSFT, Disney, DIS, and Hollywood, demonstrates the sheer power and quality of our free market economy to the entire world. But Nike, like virtually every other major U.S. business, is not a traditional American manufacturer in the old sense. It doesn't own factories. It orchestrates a global, multi-country supply chain. Nike matches each task in its apparel business to the country that can do it best. These country-specific advantages have been created over decades through heavy investments into distinct regional ecosystems. Almost all of Nike's shoes and a large chunk of its apparel are made in low-cost Asian hubs like Vietnam, China, and Indonesia. These regions have built entire ecosystems, raw materials, specialized component suppliers, skilled line workers, and localized logistics around footwear and textiles. The U.S., meanwhile, specializes in the high-value, high-return work, design, intellectual property, marketing, finance, and e-commerce. By marrying these two advantages, Nike creates enormous value. Nike is monetizing these comparative advantages all across the global economy. When you look at the cost of a typical Nike shoe, the labor component in Vietnam or Indonesia is only a few dollars per pair. The total factory production cost might be in the mid-teens. That is what enables Nike to produce high-quality shoes for around $100. Nike's massive profit margin and its massive global marketing budget is created by the efficiency of this supply chain. By letting each area of the world do what it does best, America gets to keep all the highest paid staff, the designers, R&D engineers, marketers, accountants, lawyers, and executives. When new tariffs hit the countries where Nike shoes are made, the result is a massive, recurring tax bill that costs the company billions. Nike cannot realistically avoid these tariffs by moving shoe production to the United States. The U.S. no longer has a full end-to-end athletic footwear ecosystem. The molds, tooling, and trained workforce are in Asia. Rebuilding that ecosystem here would consume an enormous amount of capital and take years, and even then, our factories likely couldn't produce shoes as well or as cheaply. By the time that ecosystem was built, Nike would be bankrupt. This kind of work, stitching, gluing, finishing, simply doesn't scale here. More importantly, Nike shouldn't invest its capital into those kinds of factories, because the return on that capital would be extremely low. Tariffs will not create an American comparative advantage in low-margin, labor-intensive manufacturing. That industry migrated offshore for good reasons. U.S. entrepreneurs found better, cheaper ways to make shoes that required less of their capital, resulting in cheaper products and bigger profits. That is good for America. As a bonus, this globalized system allows U.S. trading partners to share in the bounty of capitalism, raising their standard of living and fostering global stability. If you think Nike is an outlier, look at the rest of the American economy. The collateral damage of tariffs is visible across virtually every sector. Apple, AAPL, Apple is the ultimate example of U.S. intellectual property leveraging overseas assembly. The U.S. doesn't just lack the cheap labor to build iPhones. It lacks the localized ecosystem of specialized screws, glass, and rare earth components heavily concentrated in Asia. Tariffs won't force Apple to build factories in Texas. They simply force Apple to pass a massive tax onto U.S. consumers. Ford Motor, F. Tariffs actively harm domestic manufacturers, too. When the U.S. taxes the import of steel and aluminum, legacy companies like Ford take a massive hit. A modern vehicle supply chain crosses the U.S., Mexican, and Canadian borders dozens of times. Taxing these raw materials raises Ford's production costs, forcing it to hike car prices and making the company less competitive globally. Walmart, WMT. Walmart's model relies on global supply chains to provide everyday goods at rock-bottom prices. Tariffs on imported clothing and electronics act as a highly regressive tax, disproportionately hurting lower and middle-income Americans because Walmart's margins are too thin to absorb a 25% tariff. The cost is immediately passed to the consumer. Deere & Company, DA. Tariffs trigger a deadly double whammy for companies like tractor maker John Deere. First, their input costs skyrocket due to metal tariffs. Second, tariffs trigger international retaliation. When foreign countries respond by taxing American agricultural exports, like soybeans, it crushes the income of American farmers, Deere's core customers. Sonos and iRobot, mid-sized tech companies, perfectly illustrate why tariffs fail to bring jobs back to America. When faced with sweeping tariffs on Chinese goods over the last few years, smart speaker maker Sonos and Roomba creator iRobot didn't reshore production to the Midwest. Instead, they spent millions uprooting their supply chains and moving them to Malaysia and Vietnam. tariffs force them to burn capital on an inefficient supply chain shuffle rather than investing that money into American engineering jobs. So, what happens when you slap a 25% tariff on a globally integrated U.S. company? They are forced into three bad choices: raise prices on U.S. consumers, swallow lower margins, and reduce investments in high-value American R&D and marketing, play the Washington, D.C. power game, spending a fortune on lobbyists to get their specific supply chains excluded. All of these options are bad for America. They make our companies less efficient and less competitive internationally, and empower politicians. Most importantly, they act as a direct tax on the American consumer. For a country like the U.S., which is deeply specialized in the high-value, wealth-generating pieces of the global supply chain, tariffs are the worst of all worlds. We bear the cost in higher prices and weaker multinational companies, without gaining a meaningful domestic manufacturing base in return. But what about jobs? America doesn't lack for jobs. Unemployment is less than 5%. If you have a pulse, you can have a job in our economy. These tariffs will result in massive job losses, as our very best companies will have to lay off high-paying jobs in R&D, design, and marketing because the profit margins will all be reduced by these tariffs. If you want America to have more wealth and to have more high-paying jobs, then you should insist that the government find a different way to raise revenue. Tariffs will destroy America's economy. Finally, my favorite true believer rebuttal to the tariff lie is that it's not fair that Germany and Japan have tariffs but we don't. To which I simply reply, why would we copy anything about their economic structures? Do we want those economies? America is vastly wealthier than all of the other major economies, and our lead is growing because we have free trade. Starting wars and enacting tariffs will not make us freer or richer. Don't be a true believer. Tell me what you think. But please at least think first. PorterStansberryDirect@gmail.com. Good investing, Porter Stansberry Stevenson, Maryland. Presented by Crowdability Venture Capitalist, how to make significantly more than SpaceX IPO investors. When SpaceX IPOs, you should be selling instead of buying. A prominent venture capitalist and recent Black Label guest is revealing how to get SpaceX exposure before it hits the public markets. Right pointing finger emoji. Watch before the window shuts. Editor's note: keep in mind, we only accept advertising from publishers we know to offer well-researched ideas vetted by a legal team, excellent customer service, and reasonable refund policies. Crowdability is one such partner. We do not, however, under any circumstances make any representations about their investment ideas or strategies, nor will we warrant them as equal to our own. We do recognize that the markets are tempestuous, and, at times, ideas that we may not endorse prove valuable. Three things to know before we go. 1. Oil execs warn the Iran energy crisis is likely to get worse. The CEOs of ExxonMobil, XOM, Chevron, CVX, and ConocoPhillips, COP, told White House officials last week that the Strait of Hormuz closure is creating a supply crisis with no quick fix. Crude oil prices are above $95 per barrel this morning. Roughly 1,000 tankers remain stranded, and the International Energy Agency's coordinated 400 million barrel reserve release will cover just 26 days of the estimated 15 million barrel per day shortfall. President Trump is now pressuring NATO, the UK, and China to send warships to reopen the strait, but so far, no country has committed forces. The administration says it wants the waterway reopened in weeks, not months, but that's looking increasingly unlikely today. 2. An AI transformation for credit acceptance, CACC. New credit acceptance CEO Vinayak Hegde is repositioning the subprime auto lender and complete investor recommendation as an AI-powered lending platform, leveraging 30 years of data to achieve 2-second loan approvals, 10x faster, 70% faster tech deployment, and flat headcount despite growth. Citron Research has flipped its short position into a bullish $714 price target, a 60% bump from the current $445 per share. 3. Eli Lilly's $3 billion China expansion. Eli Lilly, LLY, has announced a $3 billion decade-long expansion into China aimed at localizing the production of orforglipron, its highly anticipated once-daily obesity pill. By shifting from complex injectables to a locally produced pill, Lilly aims to bypass global supply chain logistics and critical syringe shortages to capture a GLP-1 market in China, where adult obesity rates are 50%, that could reach $14 billion by 2030. Chart of the day. Big Coupang insider Buy Coupang, CPNG, board member and venture capitalist Neil Mehta purchased 7.35 million shares, worth roughly $136.5 million, of the South Korean e-commerce giant last week, following a 40% drop due to data breach. Mailbag your letter from March 12. Boozy McMumbles Eric H. writes, concerning your paragraph on war in the Gulf and impending inflation, thanks for your financial advice. However, The two bits of advice you offered are already painfully obvious. Let me be clear. I have a real problem with the leader of a company. You, who refers to the former United States Vice President as Boozy McMumbles. You refer to the current president with respect by using his full name despite his destruction of the world economy. Let me remind you that she earned her status in law and government by hard work and integrity. She didn't get there through any form of DEI. This shows very poor judgment on your part. You probably thought, oh, I can just say whatever I think of her, in a letter sent out to thousands of Americans, many of those who voted for her. Take note of this. Every time a white man publicly degrades a very accomplished woman of color, people remember it. Some think it's fine, while others see you as perpetuating the racial issues that have plagued this country for centuries. Either way, these are not beneficial effects. Furthermore, you should issue a public apology to all those you offended. I'm telling you right now that you offended a whole lot of people. I won't be recommending your services to anyone I know anywhere at any time. Porter comment. Bootlicker. If Harris were elected, there'd be no war. Doug W. writes, I have followed you for years and have the utmost respect for your economic judgment. But being in the cult, you're not past throwing out complete BS. For example, when you write, this isn't about politics. I'm not saying we should have elected Ms. Boozy McMumbles. Who you recommend for political office isn't about politics. And this is in spite of the extreme likelihood that if Kamala Harris had been elected, there'd be no war, the deficit would be significantly less, typical with Democratic presidents, and our streets would be much safer, as they were under President Joe Biden, and the rule of law would not be jeopardized by the actual boozy clowns in the incoherent infants cabinet. Oh, there are the ultra-rich's tax breaks that would not have happened, as if they need it, or won't use it for anything other than POCs and similar vehicles to ensure the oligarchy obliterates the rule of law. Maybe you don't think so, but I believe that we all have a responsibility to chip in and do our part to make our country great. I'm happy to pay my taxes, especially when they don't fund stupid wars, but why is this only for suckers as Trump would have it, and not for the ultra-rich who can afford it? I think that Eisenhower had it right. Porter comment, I don't think you can look at Biden's economic decisions or his open borders and claim he was good for our country. But either way, I don't believe Harris would have made a good president. I think she would have been a national embarrassment, like Biden. At least Trump was promising some of the right things. But, because he dumped Doge, started another war, and overseen an incredible expansion of government spending and deficits, the Dems will take back Congress and probably the presidency in 2028. I pray they will elect someone who understands economics and supports enforcing all the laws, but I'm certain they won't. Countries don't come back from these kinds of economic mistakes without massive consequences. Moving to DEFCON 3, Glenn G. writes, come on, Porter, tell us what you really think. Quit holding back. While there is a certain satisfaction in seeing Iranians worldwide celebrating a potential new future in their home country, nothing will change in Iran as long as the present regime remains unchallenged on the ground. I believe your assessment is spot on. Of course, here in California, it will be a complete missed opportunity, given that we are experiencing the closure of another refinery due to oppressive rules voted in by our legislature and signed by the governor. We are also seeing offshore production dying. I am surprised that there has been no legal action by the federal government since we will no longer be able to supply Travis Air Force Base Oregon, Washington, or bases in Nevada with their fuel needs, particularly when our pipelines collapse from lack of supply. Even now, we are receiving shipments of summer gas formulated in Bermuda. I'm still checking that one. Thank you also for listing the one-off impacts, as well as the investment opportunities. Please note, the investments in our Porter & Company top positions should not be considered current recommendations. These positions are the best performers across our publications, and the securities listed may, or may not, be above the current buy-up to price. To learn more, visit the current portfolio page of the relevant service, here. To gain access or to learn more about our current portfolios, call our customer care team at 888-610-8895 or internationally at +1-443-815-4447. Thank you for being a paid subscriber to Porter & Company. We hoped you enjoyed this audio issue.